Hello, good people. It is another edition of the Cool Sore Podcast. I hope you are having a fabulous day. Well, if you are alive to hear my voice, that means you have had or are having a fabulous day. Please make sure you are leaving a five-star review. That's what we need from you. Make sure you visit our website, coolsore.com. Follow our Facebook page. Follow us on Instagram. All of that good stuff. That's what we need from you, okay? Today, we are joined by a cool sore of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, Dr. China Steele. She is my dermatologist. Yes, we are talking about Botox and fillers and alopecia and cool sculpting and everything in between, and why some women are still afraid to get the Botox or the fillers and all of that stuff. So if you've ever thought about doing it, but you're like, black don't crack, well, Dr. China Steele may change your mind. She certainly changed mine. Please enjoy Skin Deep with Dr. China Steele.
You know you gotta be a cool soror to talk to the cool soror herself.
I'm a cool soror.
Hey, y'all.
I am a cool soror of...
What's up, y'all? I'm a cool soror of...
Hi, I am a cool soror of...
It's the Cool Soror Podcast, hosted by me, Rashawn Ali.
It's another edition of the Cool Soror Podcast, and I am in my dermatologist's office, and I'm so happy to welcome to the show Dr. China Steele, who is a cool soror of...
Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.
How are you?
I'm really well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I'm really excited to talk to you today because we have so much to talk about. So we're sitting in your beautiful office and it's just gorgeous here. What was the reason you wanted to get into medicine initially?
Gosh, I probably wanted to be a doctor since I was really little because my parents thought it was a good idea, to be quite honest. Uh-huh. So I feel like I'm very fortunate and very blessed to have gone through medical school and have found a specialty which really worked for me, where I felt like I can really see myself doing this. Because at the time that you have to commit to being pre-med and taking all these science courses and even going to medical school, you don't really practically know what being a doctor is going to be like.
Right.
So when I found dermatology, which wasn't until my third year, I think, of medical school.
Oh, okay.
It was like an aha moment where I felt like, okay, this is the type of doctor that I want to be, and I could see myself doing this every day.
Right. So was there another type of doctor that you thought you wanted to be and it just didn't sit well with you? Or
yeah. So going into it, I thought I wanted to be an OBGYN.
Okay. I could see that.
And I really thought I wanted to do that because I liked women. I liked women's issues and women's healthcare. But interestingly, as a dermatologist, I mean, and I love seeing men too, but I mean, I see mostly women.
Right.
So in a weird way, I think it kind of worked out the way it was supposed to. But for the reason that, you know, I like working with women and women's issues and concerns, but for the skin.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So what was medical school like? I mean, you went to undergrad at Harvard, and so all of that was all pre-med.
Right.
Yeah. And so then you get accepted to the University of Chicago for med school.
Exactly.
So what was that like? You talked about not really getting that epiphany till your third year, but people always see this part of your journey. Like, hey, what's wrong with my skin? How can I make it better?
Right.
But the real journey was when you were studying to be who you are today.
And the real journey starts with organic chemistry and biology and physiology and all those really core science classes. And it's just studying. It's being in the books. And I was always a good student. I was always someone could study and do well on tests. So that was challenging because I think of the time commitment. But aptitude-wise, it was okay. I mean, you know, I could do it. It was just committing to do it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people will say, especially like young kids, or I think when I was a little younger, people would say like, gosh, you went to medical school. I could never do that.
Right.
And my response is always like, yeah, you could. You just, you know, you would have to have committed to it. And I think that's the challenge for a lot of young people thinking about medicine is, you know, can I commit to four years of college, 4 years of medical school, and then residency? And so I just really committed to it.
Yeah. Was there ever a time when you were like, oh, this is just too much, but you had come so far and you knew like you couldn't turn back?
Not really. And I will say there was something really good that I did early on. I took a year off between undergrad and med school.
Oh, okay.
So I got to kind of live life for a year, which unfortunately a lot of people that commit to medicine early on don't get to do. I mean, they just spend, you know, their whole 20s and maybe early 30s too in school, in training. And you never get just a time to just live life and do you and, you know, travel or have fun with friends. So that was really a nice year for me. And I think it gave me a little bit more endurance going through once I actually started med school.
What do you remember most about that year? Like that 1 year off, like what did you do? Like, what was it about that year that made it special for you?
So first of all, I barely made any money. so I was doing like research, but I lived in New York City, which remains one of my favorite cities in the world. And I got to, you know, I had coworkers, you know, that I spent time with. We were all sort of doing the same thing.
Okay.
I like really lived it up in the city on my little salary. And I just got to enjoy life, enjoy myself, and really not have the focus of my life be on my career.
Yeah.
And for the next several years, a lot of the focus on my life was on my career. Mm-hmm. So it was a very free year for me.
Yeah. When you first got out of med school, so you practiced under, like you practiced with a group at first, right?
I did.
Yeah.
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 So at first, when I first started doing dermatology, I practiced with a big group.
Right.
And then I was like, I think there's something more for me. Like, I want to have more control. I want to do things my way. And so then I joined a plastic surgeon. And it was just me and him. And I think the idea that I had was that he would have the plastic surgery part of the practice and I would have the dermatology part of the practice. So I would sort of get to have my own practice without necessarily having my own practice.
Yeah.
And then what I realized is that if you don't own the practice, you don't own the practice.
Right. It's not yours regardless of how you think you're going to split it up in your head.
Exactly. Right. So then I decided that I needed to have my own practice. So that I could really shape it and grow it the way that I wanted to. And there was no financial incentive because I thought, hey, even if I make $5, I still want to know that I did things the way that I wanted to do them.
Right,
and that was the most important reason for me starting my own practice.
Yeah, so now you have, you're a doctor and now you're an entrepreneur. And like, what was the hardest part about getting this business off the ground?
The hardest part by far was just deciding to do it.
Yeah.
And getting over anything that anyone else said. And when I decided to do so, it was right at the end of a period where, you know, we had had some transitions in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And the whole time that, you know, the Affordable Care Act was coming about, people kind of didn't know what was going to happen with medicine. They were like, hold up, like, we just need to stop in our tracks and just be really safe and cautious.
Right.
So it was at a time when people, if anything, were only deciding to maybe go into bigger groups where they had more cushion.
Yeah,
and
that's
comfort.
What my OB did. Yep.
Yeah, yep. I mean, it was happening everywhere. And I still have other dermatologists and other doctors tell me, like, wow, like, that's probably really hard having your own practice. Or, you know, are you sure you want to do that? That's going to be a challenge. And to be honest, not that's not a challenge, but if you're ready to take it on and if it's the step that you decided that you wanted to take.
And it's the right step.
And it's the right step and it's the right time, then it's an exciting process.
Yeah.
And so it really was. Once I started, it was exciting and it flowed. But you know, I prepared a lot going into it. And I really took a lot of time deciding and making sure that was the right decision for me.
Yeah.
And then if things went wrong, I was okay with things going wrong. And if it didn't grow as quickly as I thought it would grow, then I was okay with that because I'd really prepared for that.
Yeah. You seem very methodical. Where do you get that from?
Gosh, you know, I don't know. I've never thought about where I got that from. I don't know. I mean, I guess my parents, to a certain extent, probably my mom. She's a planner. So I definitely know that about myself. You know, I'm logical. Yeah. I'm methodical. And maybe just, you know, my little genes. I don't know.
Yeah. How did you get to Harvard? Was that like a dream for you too, to go to Harvard? Or was there another school? Or how did you get there?
So when I was applying to colleges, I sort of knew where I fell in the whole applicant, you know, pool. And I knew that I could go to a Harvard-like school. And I remember I had only applied to very similar schools. I applied to Harvard and Yale and Stanford. And so and I got into all the schools I applied to.
Wow.
So I could
good
really,
you.
You know, choose where I wanted to go. And I just remember my dad saying, you know, if you could go to Harvard, why wouldn't you?
Wow.
And you know, it's such a unique experience there. I mean, like none other, that it was something that I felt like I couldn't turn down.
Right. You didn't want to say, what if I had gone to Harvard?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like? You said a unique experience. What does that mean? That can be broad. What does that mean?
Yeah. So I think some of the professors there, some of the you know, Cornell West was one of my freshman year professors.
Wow.
Like,
I
mean, that's just who you go see three times a week for your Monday, Wednesday, Friday class at 1 o'clock, you know? You know, Henry Louis Gates, like those sorts of people you see on campus and you interact with. So those are some really unique things about it. Like, Nelson Mandela got an honorary doctorate there when I was 1 year. It was at commencement. It was at graduation. So those are a type of experiences you get, and it's just sort of like you wouldn't see it anywhere else. But on a more practical level, some of my best friends are still my, you know, roommate, my college roommate from Harvard, my classmates and blockmates, as we call them, the people that you live in a big group with. So, and my SORs, you know, that's where I was initiated at Harvard, MIT, and Wellesley.
Yeah.
So on a few different levels, it was just a really important, great experience for
me. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Sounds awesome. Let's talk skin.
Yeah.
The biggest organ on our body, right?
Exactly.
Yes, did I say that right? I said it right? Okay, good. And I have been an advocate for steel dermatology. Do you get Botox? What's this area? Where do I get it?
The glabella. The frown. Some people call it the 11th.
The 11th. Well, that's my line number, so that makes sense. but I started noticing maybe like 3 years ago that like during on TV and like the makeup was starting to get in those lines. And I was like, oh, I got to do something about this. And I remember talking to you about it, like, what do you think? You were like, just come see me. And I have just been in love with it.
Yeah.
But what do you think is the disconnect, especially with Black women, when it comes to, you know, the Black don't crack.
Right.
Statement that we kind of all have lived by for so long.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think that that makes people a little hesitant.
Yeah, like me.
To recognize things about them that may be changing on their skin and hesitant to come in and do something about it because it feels like, wait, I'm not supposed to be getting a wrinkle. I'm not supposed to be aging, you know, like sort of like black card revoked if you, you know, see signs of aging. And so it's very true that we age differently for the most part. You know, like we do see a lot more volume shifts and folds and creases than fine lines and wrinkles. And we also have discoloration that presents a little bit differently.
Yes.
In white women and men, it tends to be more like little sun freckles and such, stuff like that, where we'll get, you know, bigger areas of discoloration and, you know, different shades to our skin where it looks uneven, but it's just in a different way than, you know, some of our white counterparts or Asian counterparts or, you know, whomever experience things. So in the end, I just try, and we're such a diverse group of people, right? So, you know, some people have really sensitive skin and dry. Some people have, you know, oilier, thicker skin. Some people are super fair. We're all black, but there can be like super fair in complexion, and others are much darker. And so we all age differently.
Right.
And so there's no shame in seeing signs of aging and wanting to do something about it.
Right.
And there are so many ways that we want to look good and take time and effort to, you know, invest in our appearance.
Yeah.
Whether it be from makeup or doing our hair or, you know, all those sorts of things. So I think it's just a natural extension to really do things for your skin the same way that you do for your hair, or your nails, or whatever part of our body we notice where we want to make a little improvement or tweak.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Me too. Me too. And I love that you love it.
Right. Right. So when people come in and you think that they've done enough to their face or are you the type of doctor that will say, I think maybe you should just pull back on this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. One, I think honesty is really important. And sometimes I will even tell people, like, I don't think you need anything right now. And maybe I'll try to direct them somewhere else.
Okay.
You know, because maybe they're coming in somewhere else on their body or their face. Maybe they're coming in there saying, I just think I need something.
Right.
Fair enough. Okay, I don't think you need more filler here. I don't think you need more Botox. But hey, why don't we try a chemical peel? Because maybe it's a little dullness in your skin that you're seeing.
Okay.
The other thing is that sometimes patients see something that I don't see.
Okay.
And I want to always make sure we're seeing the same thing. So, you know, okay, is it that, you know, your upper lip is a little too big and you just want to do something with your lower lip? We probably don't need to do both. But I also want to make sure that my reputation is preserved, and that if someone goes out and says, hey, Dr. Steele does my Botox, that it's an image that I'm proud of.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What are fillers? I mean, I've been hearing about fillers, and some, you can see a lot of folks in Hollywood and even here in Atlanta that over-fillerize. They do too much and they start looking different.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you see it automatically because you have the trained eye, but fillers go under, I mean, where do they go on the face?
To be honest, I use fillers almost everywhere on the face nowadays.
Okay.
And the reason why, and this is what I try to do for most of my patients, is I'm trying to replace volume that has been lost.
Okay.
So I'm not trying to make you look different or reshape your face like in a way that is different than the way that you currently look or that you used to look.
Okay.
It's to rejuvenate. And part of the reason we see wrinkles and folds and creases, and I think a lot of times people saying, I look tired.
Hmm.
So big reason that people think they look tired is that they've lost volume under their eyes.
Okay.
And so they've gotten like a sort of bag under their eyes, and sometimes they're like, oh, it's dark under my eyes. And sometimes that's the case, but a lot of times once I stretch that skin out and I say, see, the skin isn't actually darker, but it's sort of like a valley now.
Mm-hmm,
so you've lost volume there. And so there's like a dip there. And that can have a big impact on the way that people perceive themselves in the mirror.
Right, right.
Or the smile lines. That's been something that's, you know, been advertised a lot. You know, get rid of your smile lines.
What do you think about that?
I don't like to get rid of people's smile lines.
Because that's natural. This is natural.
That's natural. And it's not even something that makes people look older.
Right.
It's just, it's with expression. Now, some people have really, really deep smile lines. And I will fill those.
Okay.
But what I do think has been a good thing is that that has started the conversation.
Okay.
So when people start to see their smile lines and they come in, I'll say, hey, I wouldn't touch your smile lines. They're natural. They look okay. But what I do see is that in your cheek, you've lost a lot of volume. Mm-hmm. And now the shape and the proportions are a little off in your face, where the cheek looks fuller, sort of right next to your nose, but really it should look, you know, more full, kind of up closer to your eye, mm-hmm. and more to the outside of your face. So sort of the apples of the cheek should be higher up, and when we lose volume, they kind of fall down.
Yeah.
And so I point that out, and I always tell patients that I'm not filling one line. I'm not trying to fill lines. I'm trying to create the right proportions and reshape and rejuvenate your face, not fill lines. That's okay. Not what we're doing.
Okay. Wow. That's incredible. Do I need any fillers? No, I'm just No, I'm good.
I tell everyone, I'm like, I think everyone can use fillers, but that's, you know. And of course, I wouldn't make anyone look crazy.
Right,
so that's
right.
Everyone's question. Like, why look crazy? Why look puffy?
Yeah, because there's one particular star who I love, who I went on the podcast, like eventually, but she's a huge star in a movie this past weekend.
Yeah.
And her fillers look funny sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know.
Yeah.
And patients know, and they say,
that. Don't let me. Don't make. Right. I don't want to look like blank, blank.
Exactly.
Right.
All the time.
I love her. I want her to stop, though.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I think sometimes people get to be like, a little was good, a lot must be better.
Oh,
and
gotcha.
It's like, no. You don't want to, you know, you're going to look older. We have to accept that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it happens.
Like, you're going to not look 25 forever.
Right.
But, I mean, I think most people are, you know, rocking a really beautiful 30s and 40s, mm-hmm. and then preserving that into the 50s. And I think if you really do little things along the way,
right,
you can look great naturally for a long, long time.
Good. So I've actually suffered from alopecia areata mm-hmm. before. And that is the hair loss in certain areas. I'm sure you see all types of stuff that come mm-hmm. through here because you focus on the skin, hair, and body.
Yeah.
So for someone who is experiencing that, because I was so stressed out at the time that I didn't go see my current dermatologist for a long time. And then I had to end up getting injections with the ointment. Mm-hmm. So for people that may be experiencing hair loss, what is your advice to them?
When it comes to hair loss, there are a couple things. First of all, I say act quickly. So don't let time go on.
Yes.
Because there are certain types of hair loss that really are permanent.
Wow.
And so if you delay seeing a doctor, you may be costing yourself some hair permanently. But I think a big thing about hair and hair loss is we need to pay attention to our scalps and not neglect them. A lot of times we're used to enduring some pain when it comes to our hair,
yes.
when it comes to our scalp. Like, you know, if it's itchy, just scratch it or pat it out or, you know, do
pat
whatever.
It out. Right, right.
Like, if things feel too tight, just take an Aleve or a Tylenol just wait until it loosens up. And I have really been preaching that if something feels too tight or it feels like it's hurting your hair or hurting your scalp, then it's hurting your hair or hurting your
mm-hmm,
scalp.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have some ramifications long term.
Wow.
So overall, I'm trying to encourage people to really change the way that they think about and feel about their hair and hairstyling.
Yeah.
Our scalp should feel as comfortable on a daily basis as the skin on our arm or the skin on our leg. Wow. So no itchiness is normal. No pain or tenderness is normal. And if we pay attention to those things, I think people will start seeking care sooner than we have in the past.
So I'm sure, well, I don't know, have you seen a lot of women, because weaves and sew-ins and all of that are just really at an all-time high, and a lot of people neglect their hair under there, just want to make sure that their Malaysian or whatever it is looks good. So have you seen a lot of patients that have neglected their scalp because of weaves and sew-ins?
1,000%.
Man.
Like, absolutely.
Wow.
And honestly, it gets to be sort of which comes first, chicken or the egg, because once you've damaged your real hair to a certain extent, then you feel like you can't wear it because it's so bare, it's so bald, or it's so damaged. So then you lean more on things like weaves and braids. And then it becomes like a never-ending cycle,
right?
Because then your natural hair never gets better. And again, I always point to, if something feels too tight, it's too tight. If it feels like it's hurting your hair or your scalp, it's hurting your hair or your scalp.
Yeah.
And it's not worth it. I mean, I see too many people. It becomes a very emotional issue.
Yeah.
And I think hair loss, more than anything, is the issue where I see people crying in the office.
Yeah.
Especially because so many of the types of hair loss can be permanent or can be scarring. And it's not the same for everyone. You know, a lot of the things that we do, whether it be weaves, with, you know, there's too much tension, or if you have like braids and that there's a lot of hair sewn into very tight cornrows on the scalp.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're
to get the sew-in
exactly,
right.
And then you're adding weight, so
to
you're
that. Oh,
to
gosh,
that,
I didn't even think
know,
about
to
it in
hang
that way.
On
yeah.
to, and you know, sometimes people like sacrifice their edges. They're like, I mean, I know my edges are a little thin, but sort of like, I'm just gonna roll with it, or I'm gonna hope it comes back. And sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, because you'll see a lot of people trying to throw that baby hair on those edges, and they're and no offense, but it's happening.
Exactly.
And our sisters are like doing this for this, you know, they're killing their hair follicles completely.
And, you know, I think a lot of people have moved away from relaxers, which is good.
Yeah, I'm still on that team.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. It's different for everyone.
Right.
And there are probably healthier ways to do relaxers or whatever they are. But the big thing I warn people about with relaxers is do not let it stay on until it's burning.
Right.
You know, again, that hurts, and that, you know, feels like it's probably bad for your scalp.
Yep,
because it's bad for your scalp.
I know. It just happened 2 weeks ago.
And, you know, we want the relaxer to relax the hair. We don't want it slathered on the scalp like it is cocoa butter.
Right.
So, you know, that latter part, you know, in the beginning, usually they're putting the relaxer on the hair, you know, and then very carefully putting it along. And then the end, at least this is what I remember from my days of relaxers, is they would go back through and like slather it on like it was cake batter and just put it all over your scalp. And at that point, you're really harming the hair follicles.
Yeah.
So I think there are better ways to do it.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you get the desired effect for your hair. And it's not healthy for the hair, but at least we recognize that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can kind of manage that.
Yeah.
But making sure that it's not going on the skin of the scalp and damaging the hair follicles as well.
Awesome. Yeah, you're right. You're right. What other services do you offer here at Steel Dermatology? You do a lot.
We do. We do a lot. So everything as it relates to the skin, and that oftentimes goes from acne. And most things have, it's not just acne. It's just not the acne bumps. It's the blemishes. It's the dark spots. It's the scarring.
Yes.
And so all the things that will go to address that. And that may mean chemical peels. It may mean a product regimen for your skin or microneedling or a laser. So all those things that sort of go along with treating not only the actual condition, but then getting the skin repaired once it's recovered from the condition. We do things with hair, and I offer PRP, which is a sort of unique thing, I think, which is platelet-rich plasma to regenerate hair and hair follicles. And then we do a lot of the cosmetic stuff, and that is skin tightening, and it is lipo and cool sculpting and all therapy and Botox and fillers. So a lot of fun stuff. And and I like a little variety in my day, and I like being able to help my patients with sort of all the things that they have concerns about, because they're all kind of related. Yeah.
When did you transition, and we're going to wrap up in just a second, but when did you transition from just doing skin to incorporating the body, the sculpting and the lipo and all that?
Yeah.
Was that another, you had to get another certification for that? Like, how that work? How does that work?
So it's, I didn't have to go do like another fellowship or anything. Okay. So the type of lipo that I do is tumescent liposuction. It was actually invented by a dermatologist, Dr. Jeffrey Klein. And I went and I trained with him because, you know, I wanted to do it well. And so I thought it was best to learn from the best. So I did a hands-on course with him, and I went and I trained with him. And, you know, subsequent to that, we still reach out and communicate and go back and forth if there's something I have a question about or whatever. So it's been a really good sort of mentoring and working relationship. And then things like cool sculpting, again, it was a natural extension of, you know, people aren't just interested in their faces, they're interested in their bodies. And, you know, sometimes we've fixed a rash, but then people are looking down saying, but what about this little bulge
what
here
exactly is
there?
Cool sculpting?
It's a non-invasive way of destroying, quite frankly, fat cells. And we use cold to do so.
Yeah.
Fat cells are really uniquely sensitive to cold. So if they get frozen, they die off, which is kind of cool. So hence cool sculpting.
Right.
So they die, and then the body eliminates them, and then you get smaller.
Nice.
Which is really nice.
Yeah.
And then I also I think there's a personal interest, too, just because I've always – I didn't always use – to work out. So I started working, I think, when I was in med school, actually. But, you know, the body's really important to me. And so I work out a lot and try to maintain like a good frame and all of that.
Oh, the sister looks good.
Oh, you're sweet. So I, look who's talking.
Well, thanks. Thanks.
The queen of the physique there, Ms. Rashaan Ali.
Thanks.
But then, but I've had cool sculpting because we, you know, they're all little pockets that were like, ah, I wish my, you know, little lower abdomen was a little flatter or something. So even, I mean, it's actually a better treatment for someone that's really close to
so
their desired body.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then it's just to treat little pockets here and there. So, so I also have like a personal interest in the body sculpting sort
that's
of stuff.
That's cool.
Too. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. So in the fall of 1997, you became a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. Did Alpha Kappa Alpha choose you, or did you choose Alpha Kappa Alpha?
A little of both.
Okay.
I think it's always that way.
Yeah.
A little bit of both. But I have come from a long lineage of AKAs in the family.
Yes.
So if there was any organization that I would join, it would be AKA. And then it was really important to me because I did go to a predominantly white institution.
Right.
So it's really important to me to have that aspect of my college experience.
Yeah.
And so I think it really gave me a more well-rounded college experience.
Yeah. So it was Harvard, you said Wellesley?
And MIT.
And MIT. So how did you guys do that? And how many people on the line? And like, how did that work out?
It was a lot.
It was a lot. You don't have to get into it, but it was a lot.
It was a lot of trekking back and
forth. Yeah.
Between campuses.
Do they always do it like that? With the three schools?
So this is why it was those three schools, which I think is a pretty unusual thing. So especially because they did have a general Boston chapter, and then there was one other undergraduate chapter for Northeastern alone. But it was Harvard, MIT, and Wellesley more because of our academic schedules.
Oh, okay.
They were fairly similar, and so that's why those three schools came together. Now, Wellesley is way far out. Like, it is not close. Now, Harvard and MIT are actually only about 10 minutes from each other, so that was kind of easy. But the Wellesley part was a trek. But, you know, one of my line sisters is still one of my, you know, best friends. Yeah. And, you know, she was at Wellesley, and so it was nice to have, you know, people from other schools in the chapter.
Do you guys get back together, like, all three schools, or do you just get with your Harvard part of the line?
That's interesting. No, you know what? So we have a very small line, okay. You know, compared to
honey, that goes without saying, we know.
So we have a very small line, so we do all keep up. We're actually all trying to get together to go to our Lambda Upsilon is our chapter, to go to our upcoming reunion this fall. So 1977 and 2017, so that's our 40 year.
I'm not a math
anniversary
person.
Right, so right. We're all trying to get up there.
that's good awesome. What is your definition of cool?
The first thing I think of is being easygoing, open-minded, going with the flow and open to new experiences, open to different types of people, and being willing and ready to have fun.
That's you.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. Do you take yoga?
No, I should. Me too. You know what?
I got to get it together.
Because I do the intense stuff. And then, I mean, I just feel like I can't chill out enough to do yoga.
Yes, you can.
But I should. I should do it. Yeah. I should do it.
Maybe let's put that
on our
list.
Let's do a yoga. Yeah, I want to do, I heard booty, B-U-T-I yoga. Huh. It seems like it's a little, like, more rhythms and music and stuff. Let's try that one.
I might try that with
Let's try that
B-U-T-I.
One.
I have to look that up. I have to look that up. How can people find you, make an appointment, all of that good stuff?
Yes. So people can find me on Instagram. It's probably one of the easiest ones because everyone's on Instagram.
Right.
Which is at Steel Derm. So it's my last name, STEELEDERM, Steel Derm. And then our website is Atlanta Dermatologists with the S, so plural, AtlantaDermatologists.com. Facebook is Steel Dermatology. Phone number is 770-464-6000. Reach out.
Yes.
We're happy to see you.
And let them know that you heard about Dr. Steele on the Cool Sore Podcast, all right? So she'll know where you came from.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for being a part of the show. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot today.
Good.
Yeah,
thank you.
So did our listeners. I'm glad. Don't be afraid of the Botox, ladies.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. Dr. China Steele, everybody.
Hi, I'm Dr. China Steele, and I'm a dermatologist, and I'm a cool sore of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.